This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening. This is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan. Today, how can we be doing better with our public transportation systems? First, a recent audit of our rapid bus fleet showed high costs of maintenance. So we look at how to keep our public transport system cost efficient. Then we discuss better planning and infrastructure. Finally, we look at ways to encourage people to be less reliant on cars. So tell us, how can our public transport be improved? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:07, and this entire topic of conversation is really coming on the wake of the Auditor General's report 2019 that found our rapid bus fleet is actually costing our government a significant amount of money. And this has to do with the fact that, the buses are getting old. More than half of the bus fleets are more than 8 years old, and this means that they require higher maintenance cost because of repeated breakdowns. So, one example that the report pointed out was that a 13-year-old Rapid KL bus had to be serviced 360 times at the cost of almost 200,000 ringgit. So this, of course, brings about the question of really efficiency, effective spending of money, and whether we should be making better financial choices in terms of upkeeping our public transportation system. The Rapid KL buses, of course, play a really large role in keeping our city connected and in terms of providing a really essential service. But if it's costing us this much, then are there things that we should be doing better? Because if you just look at the overall amount that's being spent, maintenance costs for these buses have almost quadrupled from 2018 to 2019. And operational costs come up to 1.7 billion ringgit compared to the net earnings of 827 million. So that's a huge disparity in terms of what these buses cost and what they cost to maintain and what they earn. So there are a lot of issues here to unpack, but it all comes back, I think, to this question of our public transport systems, but in a larger sense, the planning that goes into it, the way in which we not just think about them in the short term, but how we plan for our public transportation in the long term. Because if we want to move towards all of those things that we keep saying we should be doing, a more connected city, a city that relies less on cars, a city that allows its residents to move about easily, to want to use public transportation on a daily basis, then it's equally important that it is something that's not just planned but sustainable and doesn't end up costing us more than the convenience it brings us. So we're looking at public transportation today, and we are going to be looking at it from these perspectives, the perspective of first the cost, but then the larger idea of better planning, better infrastructure for our public transportation systems. We'd like to hear from you. How can our public transport be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Coming up after this, we'll be first looking at that issue of cost efficiency with Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at USM. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
It is 6:12. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And today we're talking about public transportation and more generally how we can really improve our public transportation systems, make them more cost efficient, more well-structured, well-planned, all of those things. We'd like to hear from you. How can our public transport be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. So first we're going to look at cost, and for that we are joined by Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, who is Professor of Transport Engineering at University Sains Malaysia. Prof. Farhan, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Thank you for having me again. Yes.
Thank you for coming back. And
pleasure.
On that audit report on our rapid bus fleet, what were your initial thoughts? Are the high costs of maintenance something that you were aware of?
Yes, it's expected, actually. I think when I was the SPAD commissioner a few years back, this issue was highlighted. I think a lot of our public transport operators had trouble to manage their operation costs, and in particular maintenance costs. So I guess it's an ongoing challenge that our public transport operators has been facing for many years. Yeah.
So this particular report, of course, looked at the maintenance costs of the rapid buses. But more generally, what can you tell us about the approximate cost of running our public transport system?
Okay, I do not know the details of the costing, but I can appreciate the challenge that our public transport operators are facing. I think in particular for rapid buses, I guess it was a customized order, okay, because the buses looks very similar. So maybe there's the market or the supply of the buses are exclusively perhaps for rapid. So I guess the options for service providers and parks and labor and so on will be limited to them. So maybe with I'm sure they had contract maintenance agreements and but again, in the context of an operation of a bus provider or bus company, there is always that revenue end that needs to be given a thought, right? So generally, the profit margins of public transport operators are very, very, very narrow. And sometimes with the challenges of getting enough passengers and what more with the pandemic, I'm sure it's very challenging. So it's not only the cost part, but it's also the revenue part. So, but anyway, I'm not sure. I remember those days there were initiatives done by SPAD to help the bus companies with regards to the maintenance costs by talking to the players. But I'm not sure now because I'm not in the circle anymore. So yeah, it is, Shamila, is a challenge to the public transport operators. And I think we need to do more in order to make sure that their services are not disrupted. And yet our travelers, commuters travelers who are relying on buses may continue to use their buses, So I guess, I do not know the details of the costing and whatnot, but I just can appreciate the whole scene that they are, or the challenges that they are facing.
What is the gap? I mean, I think just from a layperson's perspective, it might sound like buses are something everyone uses and would be useful. So what is the gap in terms of why we're not making up that revenue?
Oh, okay. There is always about demand and supply. Okay, so I think for one, when we estimate demand, we may not have sufficient data to be confident about the demand forecast. Right, meaning which route is the routes that are more lucrative in terms of giving us high numbers of passengers, and which routes are really social routes where we are providing access, or the companies, the buses operators are providing access because we are providing service to the community. So first of all, I think we need to be clear on this. Usually, bus operators will use the lucrative routes to cross-subsidize the social routes, as they say. So we need to understand the profile of the demand accurately, and thereafter make a planning based on that understanding. Okay, this includes the alignment or the choice of the routes, where will it go through, where it will apply, the penetration rate, as well as the capacity that we are providing. And capacity, we must also understand, differs from peak and off-peak hours. And sometimes we do see rapid buses, at least from my perspective in the south of Penang, we do see buses are running empty. I understand why, because all rapid buses are of the same size. Okay. And they are not able to manage their fleet according to the variation in demand. In some countries, I do see that in the off-peak, they will use a smaller buses, like a minibus, so that cost is lower and they can optimize their fleet. The understanding of the demand profile will also help us to schedule in terms of frequency. Do you like go, you know, 20 minutes every hour for the whole day, or you change, or you customize it according to the demand. So I guess the gap really lies on how accurate and how much we understand the demand for public transport. Okay, but we have a bigger challenge, because public transport usage in the country is not the norm. Okay, using private transport is the norm. So there is a challenge now faced by the country to move, as indicated in the recent RMK-12, we have not met our 30% goal for mode share for public transport in Klang Valley. We have not talked about non-Klang Valley model shift, which is even worse. Okay, so it all boils down to what we want for the country. And I think I am happy to listen that RMK-12 is putting sustainability agenda as a prime motivator. So public transport has to play a bigger role. Okay, we have actually progressed a lot for the past 10 years, perhaps, especially in the Klang Valley. But now the progress has to go beyond Klang Valley, because accessibility is not only for Klang Valley people, it's for the whole nation. So I feel the gap needs to be helped by the government. Okay, so this is where I do not see any specific assistance from the government to the public transport operators. Maybe I'm wrong. I have not gone through the detail of the report. But while we talk about rail, yes, that's good. While we talk about Klang Valley transportation system, that is good. But we should not forget about the accessibility to transportation, especially public transportation for our rural areas, for the smaller towns in the country, you know. So I think, but again, from the perspective of the operator, is a big challenge, and it will be tough if there is no assistance from the government. That's my thoughts about it.
What are some things that you would like to see so as to create that balance between keeping the cost of public transportation, you know, at a reasonable level, but also in terms of making it accessible, making it efficient? What are some things you'd like to see done?
I feel the government really needs to help these operators. And this is where I think the government started off, the Prime Minister started off the RMK-12 by saying that we will not have mega projects for RMK-12 because of the recovery mode that we are in. But I think I agree, because the money can be better spent to something that is much cheaper. For example, looking into how buses can play a better role in the country, which we have not done, unfortunately, because SPAD came up with the public transport master plan, if you recall. Okay, and we were able to execute the public transport master plan for the Klang Valley area. Okay, and that is the reason why we have what we have now in the Klang Valley area, and is still expanding and progressing. But there was a sort of phase two of the public transport master plan, which is for the rest of the country. Okay? Unfortunately, SPAD was disbanded before that could be fully realized. And we hope that the successors of SPAD, which is APAD and and Ministry of Transport will pick it up, continue with the agenda by following what the Public Transport Master Plan has actually designed for, and put some money to it, you know, and I'm sure the investment will be much, much less than perhaps the HSR or you know, the more mega projects that is even more challenging in terms of financing. But I think it is a wiser expenditure of money. I mean, that is my hope and my dream. Because remember, even if we have an extensive rail network in the country, which we do not have yet, okay, we only have in the north, okay, the south is coming soon. We hope to get the ECRL soon. But remember, these are all train stations that need to be accessed. So we still need that last mile option. And usually the last mile option will be provided by buses, you know. So I do not know. I don't think so. Okay. Not in my professional awareness of things. We have really planned this for the whole country, you know. Even in Penang, we are still, you know, they are struggling with the public transport master plan, as we know. So even though we have Rapid Penang, it is serving its role, but I think it can be further improved.
Now, speaking of buses, Malaysia has introduced mm-hmm. electric buses such as the BRT system. Has yeah. this been helpful in terms of mitigating the costs of maintenance and upkeep of the existing buses?
Well, we have to wait a few years. Okay, we have to wait until things are not brand new. Okay, I think that's the challenge of maintenance. And with due respect, sometimes our culture of infrastructure of a lot of things in the country, you know, we do not plan for maintenance. Okay, and we usually stop at the launch. You know, the ceremony of the launch, the starting of the things, and we seldom give due consideration and planning for what happens after operation, which is the point where deterioration starts, which is the point which is more critical, because that is going to ensure true demand rather than forecasted demand. This is going to be true demand that ensures viability of viability of projects as well as the cash stream and the revenue or profit margin for this operation. So I hope that in the introduction of any system would have considered the maintenance costs part, as part of it, okay? And also, I feel there must be an end-of-life policy for the vehicles used in public transport systems. Because I think once you have determined the end-of-life, you can plan better, all right? And you know how much operational costs that will be accrued over the years with the maintenance costs. And at one point, you have to replace the buses. Okay? Because if you don't replace the buses, your service will deteriorate. And when your service deteriorates, public will not be happy and your service levels will not be meeting the expectation. And when that happens, you might lose passengers. And our current progress in the country is to attract new passengers. So we can't afford to lose passengers along the way. Unfortunately, the pandemic did not help. Of course, as you all know, I think the companies are struggling because they were, you know, the demand was very low for many months. And now we are just picking up and there is a confidence crisis. What more if companies are facing financial situation? So that's again why I think the government has to pitch in. You know, it's about survival now, but then perhaps the government can come up with a scheme that can help these companies grow. And once they are stabilized, once demand has been established, and then they can talk about the right variability of services that can give better options for users, and hopefully will attract new shift from the private users, especially motorcycle users. You know, because as you know, we have problems with motorcycles in terms of safety. Public transport is one way to attract them so that they leave their motorcycle and not be too dependent on motorcycle. But we can't do that unless our public transport is up to their standard.
Prof, we just have about a minute left. Overall, is there enough transparency when it comes to the cost of running our public transport system? What would you like to see done better?
Well, I guess in terms of the finance, I think it is there in the reports. You know, I'm not sure about what you mean by transparency. I guess it is something that can be helped by the Ministry of domestic trade in terms of price capping. You know, if government feels this is very very critical and very important, we can help there. I mean, there's always means of government to help. But again, somebody has to flag the problem. So it's good that the AG has flagged the problem. But again, the response to that flagging needs to come from perhaps Ministry of Transport on perhaps a suggestion on how the government can help and perhaps give some taxation relief or something, you know. So I'm not sure what you mean by transparency, but that is something that we can do. And now, you know, it's not a secret, I guess. It's something that definitely has to be planned. And I pray that Prasarana, as the owner of the Rapid, will survive and will prosper, because they have a very important and critical role for sustainability of transportation system in the country in the future.
Prof Farhan, thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
That was Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at USM, weighing in on the AG's report that our rapid bus maintenance is actually very high, and what that says in terms of our what our public transport is costing us and what we could be doing better. After this, we'll be looking at infrastructure and planning. But in the meantime, do send your thoughts our way. How can our public transport be improved? This is Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:37. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila, and today we're focusing on public transport. So earlier we looked at the costs of running public transportation systems here in Malaysia and what the gaps are, what we could be doing better. And now we'll be taking a wider look at infrastructure and planning in terms of how best to move forward. We have been asking you for your thoughts. How can our public transportation system be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Before we move on to our next guest, just a couple of messages, two really, that touch on the same point. So we had a call earlier from Wong, who said, on public transport, the government spends so much money on buses and then they don't survey anyone. Why do we need a huge bus to send so very few people to the train station? I've observed that there are only 20 people in the bus. And Anthony touches on a similar point and says, I see a lot of buses either running without passengers or with only one or two passengers, particularly during off-peak hours. These huge buses, some even double-decker buses, run only with one or two passengers. They burn a lot of fuel. They add to our carbon footprint, pollution, heat, and so on. And it costs a lot to maintain them. So during off-peak hours, they should use smaller buses that cost a lot less and are cheaper to maintain. Big buses should be for peak hours. This will involve less investment costs on new buses and at the same time lower the cost of maintenance. Anthony, both you and Wong make a really good point, which our guest earlier, Prof Farhan, mentioned as well, the need for a more organized and a sort of a more planned system in terms of what needs these buses are serving, which areas to invest in bigger buses for, at what times of day. And I absolutely agree that these are things that require more work to be done in terms of putting it in place rather than just maintaining buses, buying new buses, but also to put thought into how we're using them and what the most effective way of using them is. Do keep those thoughts coming. How can our public transport be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to talk about planning and infrastructure when it comes to our public transportation, we're joined by transport activist Bernard Chong from Transit Malaysia. Bernard, thank you for being with us today.
Me, Sharmila.
So, is our current public transport system infrastructure adequate for our needs as a country?
In short, Malaysia's public transport system infrastructure planning and implementation isn't adequate for a country's needs. Now, if we look, let's look at the rural areas first for once, you know, to give them priority. A lot of stage and, you know, bus provisions within rural areas tend to be very patchy. You know, people in rural areas can't come to regional centers like Ipoh or Penang or Kuantan to access social services, to access commerce, to access, you know, social opportunities. But even in the inner cities themselves, there is such a disjointed public transport system that to get from one end of KL to another takes far too long, because either you can't reach a bus stop because the bus stop's at least 15 to 20 minutes away, or the bus stop's unsafe. You know, train services are often unreliable, especially on the KTM commuter routes, or they are just unaffordable, or they're just inaccessible because the stations are developed without accessibility features in mind. So a disjointed system means poor outcomes for the traveling public. Yeah, so that's what I'm going to say.
So what would be the, or I suppose, what are the most pressing things to be addressed? What are the main gaps that should be looked at first?
Well, the main gap is policy. So we always start a transport discussion around whether we have the policies that we need to create better public transport outcomes for all. And right now, there is this trend of integrating transport and land use planning, because transport, especially public transport, depends on dense neighborhoods around transport nodes in order for them to be effective and efficient in bringing people from point A to point B. So other countries, like where I am right now in Melbourne, we are starting to get this recipe right, where we are putting, you know, where we're putting public transport at activity centres and centres of employment. But we have not seen this done very well in Malaysia. We've got attempts at this with the MRT, but it's more often than not, it only has served to benefit, you know, the higher echelons of society. Whereas people who actually need public transport, especially in the more in areas of Kuala Lumpur, where people are more reliant on public transport to get to work, they don't have any coverage at all, or they have to suffer with inconsistent coverage. So the policies need to be there to first rationalize our public transport system, to make it work as a system that is integrated into the fabric of the city, which is to, you know, improve services, to make sure that services are accessible, and to ensure that policies are in place to continually revise that, to ensure our public transport works well now and into the future. And this also brings into the question, what infrastructure do we need, when, and how much should we be paying for it? So there needs to be an effective regime of evaluating where do we need the infrastructure the most, what kind of infrastructure we want, and what should the infrastructure do to serve the community. It's not just about building for the sake of building, you see. It's also about asking the community, what do you want from your public transport system, and what can infrastructure and what can services do to get us there?
Talk to us about some of the suggestions that you might have to improve the existing public transport system.
So in terms of existing improvements that we could do, it will be first to figure out first and last mile connectivity. So in order for train services to work, in order for bus services to work, people need to be able to get to the bus stops or the train stations. But what we tend to see is that there is, again, disjointed planning policy and disjointed transport policy. For example, places like, you know, business centers are placed so far away from train stations that they are not linked together, or they're separated by huge highways, which means that even though there are town centers which are close to train stations, they are nigh on inaccessible because it shouldn't be crossing an 8-lane highway. And, you know, integrating policies so that they provide protection, in the sense that you can say, okay, there's a train station here, or there's a bus stop here. You must not build things that prevent access to this bus stop. Embed that into transport and planning policy as a way of, you know, creating better outcomes, to create better accessibility outcomes. And then also, in terms of improving information you provide to the public, depending on the providers that you have, the transport provider that you have, information can either be really good or really bad, especially during disruptions. It's a bit like me, yeah, on and off. So improving information provision and giving people an option of giving feedback about their services, you know, public transport operators are giving a service to the public. They should be engaging the public. Having more engagement with the public and giving them the correct information at the time they need it will go further in terms of improving public transport services. And, you know, again, it all comes back to policies to enable that to happen.
Is there an opportunity here to incorporate new technologies that might make this process easier or simpler to implement?
Yeah. So as a planner, I get a bit jittery when I hear the words new technology, not because I'm a Luddite, but in terms of it being, I like to see plans to introduce it, to test it out in a comprehensive manner. Because what we don't want to do is suddenly say, oh, let's have a Hyperloop in the middle of Kuala Lumpur, which doesn't serve anyone. You know, I as a planner am focused on good public transport outcomes from start to finish. So we can talk about technology, but what we should be focusing on is first ensuring that our public transport system is sustainable. So getting the basics right, you know, getting fares right, getting frequencies right, getting coverage right. Those are the three main things. Customer service. Those are the four main things you need to get right first. Then we can start considering technologies. But that being said, you know, there are things like, you know, there's a lot of people talking about driverless technology, you know, automated buses. There's also been people talking about, you know, autonomous vehicles. Sure, those are things that we actually need to have transport policies on, but they need to be framed in a more broader integrated transport sense as well, because transport works in an ecosystem. We can investigate and pilot these things, but there needs to be specific policies in place to make sure that they integrate each other rather than fight each other.
I wanted to draw on something that comes up fairly often now when we talk about transportation, which is sustainability. Is Malaysia giving enough thought to increasing the sustainability of our public transport systems?
Well, it depends on how we define sustainability, because I can tell you that the vision of the 2019 to 2030 transport policy is to develop a sustainable transport sector that accelerates economic growth and supports the well-being of the rakyat in line with an advanced nation status. The problem is we don't define any of these terms. So in terms of economic sustainability, unfortunately, successive governments have not paid enough attention to it. There is this sense that they're expecting the public transport system to pay itself off when the infrastructure is crumbling to a point that it can't do that. So a lot of public transport systems, like some functions of the bus system, are in debt. And they are going to be perpetually in debt unless significant investments are made to uplift the assets that they have and to realign their services to better serve the rakyat's needs. So in terms of economic sustainability, probably not. In terms of environmental sustainability, we are still pretty far behind on the electric bus, on implementation of hybrid electric buses. We are thinking about it when other countries have already, even our own coach builders in Johor have started selling electric buses to Sydney, you know, when we haven't even adopted them ourselves. Not to say that we need to jump on the bandwagon that quickly, but the things we need to have a national, you know, public transport asset management strategy, which basically enforces the need to maintain our assets better and to also time the renewal of our assets so that we don't sweat our assets to a point that the assets are going to break down. You know, because we want to make sure that public transport is safe for all. And that includes ensuring that assets are safe for everyone.
So I wanted to get you to comment on this message from a listener. So Patrick says, privatization of the public transport system improves efficiency. As the current model seems to cause operational and cost control challenges, maybe it's time to look into privatization. What are your thoughts? Could privatization be perhaps the answer to some of these challenges?
It's a very big if I might say so, because I live in Melbourne. We have privatized our public transport system. So our trams are run by a company called Yara Trams, which is ironically the French state system cooperating with an Australian railway company. So it's privatization, but it's just basically other states that are just buying over control of our assets. Not really that much different. There have been some successes in privatization. So Sydney Metro, which is a new project, a new driverless metro train project, that's run by MTR Hong Kong. But the reason for its success is not because of the company, but because of the very specific contract that ex-London Underground staff that are now working in transport for New South Wales put on MTR to deliver services. It is the contract and not the company that creates these official outcomes. In terms of Melbourne, Melbourne has been a model of failure for privatisation. Our 1 in 10 trains are late in Melbourne, and it's also run by the same company who runs Sydney Metro. So it's a bit of a hit and miss. It's a big if. We won't know if public privatisation actually does work. And in fact, we were close to privatisation at one point. KTM was split in two by the Najib administration with the view of privatising it, but they backed off. You know, it doesn't mean that privatisation won't work, but it's also not a panacea to improve services. Governance still needs to be improved in either circumstances.
Bernard, thanks for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thanks.
That was Bernard Chong, a transport activist with Transit Malaysia, speaking to us about infrastructure and planning when it comes to our public transportation system. After this, we'll be looking at initiatives that can encourage people to rely on cars less. But meanwhile, do keep sending your thoughts our way. We're getting so many already. How can our public transport system be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
It is 6:52. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila. And we've been talking about public transport. And so we thought we'd close off our conversation by looking at it from a more human perspective, the things that could get people to use cars less, to rely on public transportation more. But please keep sending your thoughts our way. How can our public transport system be improved? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, this idea of going carless on particular days of the week is not necessarily new, but it's sort of revived because of a policy that's being adopted by DBKL or Kuala Lumpur City Hall, and they're encouraging employees to use public transportation more. And this is being coupled with giving away travel cards for their employees. They're also looking at an initiative to ban them from driving to work every Friday as a way of going carless. So lots of initiatives there in terms of encouraging the usage of public transport. So we thought we'd close off our conversation by discussing how these work, whether they work, and what others we could be looking at. And for that, we are now joined by Pim Reike, who is Associate Director at MDS Traffic Planners and Consultants. Pim, thank you for being with us today.
Hi, Sharmila. Thank you for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here. How's it going?
It's going well, thank you. Now, what are your thoughts on DBKL's move to set Fridays as no-car days for their employees? Is this something you'd like to see more organizations do?
I think it's great. Obviously, this was announced as part of a low carbon city effort, getting people more comfortable, more healthy in the city. A laudable goal, I would even say a lofty goal, right? That in itself will require a huge effort and a strategy. And really, there's so much to do to reach those goals. But in every strategy, there's levels to it, right? There's different levels to it. And this initiative is one of these levels, touches one of these levels, which is to show leadership. That's a huge part of good policy making. And at least for myself, I applaud DBKL and the mayor for bringing that to the table.
So, please go on.
You also asked me if would we like to see other organizations do the same? Yeah, definitely. Let's let all the officers join in. Sometimes we all need a little bit of a push to give this kind of stuff a try. And hopefully DBKL can get input from us as well. Of course, for themselves, they are the policymakers. So for them, it's definitely the priority to see the struggles. But yeah, the more the better, definitely.
How effective are initiatives like No Car Days in the long term? Are they enough to effect a change in behaviour?
Look, these initiatives are, like you mentioned, we're not the first, and they've been taking place across the world since the early 2000s. There's been a global world car-free day on the 22nd of September. So they raise awareness, but definitely long-term, is this enough to actually get a change? If that were the case, DBKL could implement a five-day of the week car-free strategy for every company, and we'd be done with it. Obviously, that's not practical. So by itself, no, I don't think that's enough, no.
So what would you say needs to happen in terms of what else needs to bolster these sorts of initiatives to make them actually applicable and for people to be able to take them on?
That's a huge question. Honestly, there's really a lot to it, right? There's a variety of levels here that I mentioned already. There's a starting from things that are already within DBKL's authority, right? For example, just improving the timetables. There's things like which are showing leadership, having these bold initiatives that don't really require sweeping policy changes. And this is one of them, right? And then we get into the stuff that really requires to follow through on these initiatives. And then we're even talking about introducing, for example, employer taxes to pay for public transport, or connecting on a national level the public transport policies. So there's a lot to it, right? And I'm sure DBKL also already has this strategy in mind. There's a lot of different things that fit into this.
In Malaysia, what are the main challenges in terms of encouraging people to rely on their cars less?
I think, first of all, I think it's interesting to say, you say encourage. There's a lot to encourage, but you have to understand that worldwide, globally, a lot of things actually got done by discouraging people from using the car, not encouraging them to do something else, right? If it really, really is a hassle and very expensive to take your car into the city, more so than something else, that could actually help. But that's not easy because we spent decades investing and improving the road infrastructure, right? The car-focused infrastructure. Even for ourselves as transport consultants, we get judged on whether we can make cars move, not alternative mobility. There's a strong car lobby. Really, there's a variety of things that stand in the way. And there's also a bit of a culture problem. But that's something that has been there across the world and can be phased out for sure.
Pim, thank you for speaking with us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was Pim Reike, Associate Director of MDS Traffic Planners and Consultants, weighing in on initiatives like car-free days and what more needs to be done to, discourage people from using their cars. Do send your thoughts our way. How can we improve our public transport systems? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.